All right, we are back with another episode of the Work Week After Hours. Steve, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing well, Shane. Feels like it's been a while.
It's been a couple weeks. You've been in the thick of things, traveling around and talking, and the world's kind of opening up and out and in front of people and spreading your knowledge and helping and getting feedback. And I've had a trip to Portugal setting up an apartment and all that fun stuff, but we're kind of back in the saddle here in the midst of March Madness.
We are. This is one of my favorite time of years. You know, you and I share a real joy for sports. I think the March Madness is one of the greatest sporting events there is. Even though it is a business, we both know that there is some pureness to the joy of the seeing the schools and the athletes just really feeling that. I feel sometimes pro sports is kind of mitigated that pure joy. And we talked about this before, man. I love what I do because I get to see people handle different circumstances. And we're going to see that this next 3 weeks. And so I'm super excited about it. But, man, there's so many other things. You're right. I was on the road. You were on the road. Lots going on in the world. What do you want to focus in on today?
Well, real quick, so we can kind of date this and see. Mm-hmm. I have not looked at a bracket yet. So who do you have in your Final Four, and who do you have winning it all?
I have Texas Tech, Kansas, Gonzaga. I forget who my fourth one is.
All right. I have
Gonzaga, Kansas, and then I have Kansas winning it.
Okay.
Oh, Tennessee, I think is the Tennessee's the other one. Mm-hmm. Yep. Sorry, no Kentucky in there.
Oh, it's all right. I'm not a Kentucky fan, so
that's right.
It's quite all right. I'm actually okay with it. I'm actually rooting. But
don't let
for
me
you.
Lead you. Don't let me lead you with my picks. Not that you would anyway.
Yeah. But, No. I'll knock a bracket out today.
I'll send you a link after the show because my kids are we've been doing this for years and
let's do it.
Yeah, it's fun.
Let's do it. All right. So there's a topic, and you know, as typical of our episodes, we kind of do these on the fly. But there's been a common theme that's kind of come up in a lot of conversations I'm having. I know a lot of conversations you're having of the future of work and how that has collided with this talent market, right? And what's happening. And I think there's at a 10,000 foot view, there's three levels of kind of really what exists with talent, right? You've got the individual contributor, you've got your big businesses, your big enterprises, and then you've got your medium to small and your entrepreneurs and startups kind of all kind of fit in that world. And I think I'd really like to peel back the onion a little bit on each one. I've had some really interesting conversations with some different folks that I want to kind of reference because I want to create this conversation. And I know our listeners really try to think through these things and maybe they're dealing with them on one end or the other, or they're thinking about, you know, I'm having talent problems. We have an interesting way we like to word that. They're having talent problems, or the other side to it of maybe some of our listeners are like, hey, I really want the Shane has talked me into moving to Portugal now and I want to go do that. But I keep talking to these companies and they keep telling me they won't hire me if I'm living in Portugal. Right. So let's maybe start with the startup, small business, entrepreneur type companies. I was sharing with you just as we were coming on about a gentleman that I'm aware of that is in the throes. He's in middle America hiring and he's in the throes of trying to hire. Crazy, wild story where somebody he had found out as they were trying to hire other people that he was underpriced. And now he wants a raise or he's looking at other positions. So it's interesting that, you know, we know the big companies are having trouble hiring, right? We know that everybody's having trouble hiring in some form or fashion. How do we wrap our head around the fact that they're the LinkedIns of small business, right? Of the growing LinkedIn days. They're stuck in between everybody who can pay more, who can offer a new laptop and a nice cell phone and, you know, all these different things. How do we wrap our head around this? What do we do?
Wherever you sit, the way I look at it is pretty simple. Wherever you sit in the domain of I'm trying to create value, it's me, myself, me and a partner, me and a small team, me and a medium-sized team, me and a huge organization. I think you have to step back and say, unfortunately or fortunately, there's several shifts that have taken place and that are taking place. First, talent's thinking about the world of work differently and their relationship to it and what they want to do. And that hasn't settled yet. So some people who were skilled at doing something before don't want to do that anymore. And so that limits some supply, but it also requires us to have a deeper conversation to understand where people are at when we're talking to them. And so the length of the recruiting cycle all of a sudden is feeling pressure, because if you're trying to hire someone, it's a little longer to hire, and you're going to need to invest a little bit more than you were before, I think, to really understand the motivations of the people that you're dealing with, right? So that's a start. So supply and demand, very simple economics. When supply, shrinks, price of that supply goes up, okay?
Yep,
and yep. It's not a surprise. We're seeing salary growth, compensation growth, and different organizations are trying different things, whether it's a 4-day work week, whether it's more freedom, more flexibility, whether it's bigger bonus, a bigger sign-on bonus, bigger retention bonus, bigger tuition reimbursement. People are trying lots of different stuff because they don't know what the real lure is to get people to draw their attention to your company, right? And so I think earlier up the chain, Shane, if we're starting with smaller firms, okay. The first question I would ask myself if I have a small firm is, what assets do I have?
Yeah. Well, let me frame it for you, not to interrupt. Okay. I'm sorry. Right. So typically we're talking about small businesses. So we're talking about local restaurants, school districts, hospitals, things like that. They're struggling. They're struggling with talent.
Yeah. So I think the first suggestion I'm going to have is you're going to have to learn how to modify your work such that you don't need someone who's fully experienced for you to build value in whatever it is, right? Maybe you have a expert waiter. Well, can't find all the waiters that we need, or maybe a chef's a better one. Can't find a full chef. Okay, maybe I need to find a couple of sous chefs, a couple of finishers, and so combined, we can deliver food. But if I can't find a chef, I got to find another way of creating it, or find a junior apprentice who wants to be, take a bit of a risk, but maybe draw them in because it's not going to cost me as much as a regular chef, and I'm going to have to hedge that they can learn and not sacrifice the quality of our food. You know what I'm saying? So you're going to have to start taking risks. And I'm telling you, when I've had to do this by force of necessity, I found it works out way more than you think it will.
Yeah. By taking risks, right? Like mm-hmm. it's like so what you're saying is in your time at LinkedIn, kind of bringing it full circle, there were some times where, well, let me ask, I guess I don't want to assume, mm-hmm. you maybe said yes to some candidates that on paper you had no business saying yes to, but something about your conversation and what fit was like, okay, I have a feeling this might work, because what other options do we have?
Right. We didn't. And so we're also had the added complexity of it's a new business model. We, no one had ever built the business in the way that we were building it. No one had ever done it before. But you see, there are things about a candidate that you can cross off to give yourself more certainty. Do they have a good work ethic? Do they have good references? Do they have a drive? Do they have a thirst for learn? Do they have evidence that they can learn new things quickly? If they haven't done something, do you have evidence that they've learned other new things before to lower your fears? You know what I'm saying? So that's where I would say, rather than, and maybe this is overly simplistic, but I'm just going to throw it out there. Rather than spend all your time trying to find the perfect person, maybe invest more time trying to look at the anatomy of what someone could do to learn it. Because, as we've talked about this before, the excitement and energy we all have professionally when we take on something new often mitigates the boredom that people have when they've been doing something for a long period of time. So that's how I would initially say, you know, start looking at it and changing jobs. Like, you may think I need to have these people doing this and those people doing that. Maybe it doesn't need to be that way. Maybe you can try to experiment with changing up responsibility so that you had one person, you know, cleaning up. Maybe you have two people part-time cleaning up in different ways, different parts. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Just different.
Yeah. Yeah. So this, I'll tell you where my mind goes with this. Are we in a time where leaders now have to be better teachers almost, or like, because there has to, especially in the small or the early local businesses, the owner of those said businesses most of the time did the job at some point in the beginning to learn it. You had to understand it, right? Very few people just hire people out at that stage of a local business. So they've done it, right? So now we're going to find out who's really good at teaching and growing rather than, and it's March Madness. So I'm going to make, a basketball reference here. You have some teams that go for the one and dones, right? You have some teams that say, we want to go after the best talent. We want to recruit the best talent, whatever's out there. You have other teams that don't do that. And they say, we're going to go out, we're going to go hire for the best potential, for the ones we think have the best bones that we can build on. You can argue that both potentially can be successful, but they're two very different styles. One's built out of necessity. One's built out of pure talent. And talent is, I can grow someone, right? I use this reference, and I won't use too many basketball references this episode, but with Coach K in the University of Kentucky, it's often been said, I hear this argument all the time. Oh, he's had all these players go to the NBA. There's not been but one or two players out of all the players he's had at the Kentucky, at the University of Kentucky, that wouldn't have gone to the NBA no matter where they went to school. So it's not him building NBA talent, okay? That's very different. There are teams out there that do build NBA talent. There are teams that does happen. So it's very different. And I think in the small business world, as leaders, God, and I don't want to make leaders out to be like the villain here, but you got to kind of step out of the high office, you know, step off the stoop a little bit and get your hands dirty and start to teach and start to grow talent, right? You got to grow talent. You can't offshore development talent if you're running four local sandwich shops that you've built out in the local neighborhood, right? You got to go find people. And I think, I don't know, maybe you see it differently, but I think you got to be a better teacher right now. Almost that's like the cream of the crop skill right now to be a leader in one of those sectors.
And I think I don't disagree with anything that you're saying. And I think that trend is going to be towards a leader role. We've always known leaders should grow talent. We've always known that that's on the responsibility list of every leader. But what proportion of your time is spent really, really doing that, I think, has been very, very small.
Yeah.
And now the force of the market change is requiring this to be a massive necessity. Yep. And honestly, it's a hard pivot for many leaders who've been doing it their way for a long period of time. Yep. And I think we need to give them some grace. We need to give companies some time to adjust to it, because it's going to take some time. I had a really super interesting exchange with, you saw the inbound that we got a few weeks ago. Hey, we're doing some research on these gig workers, and Our study is revealing this kind of data. Can you respond to it? Because we're going to put a book together. We'd love to have your thoughts on it. One of the questions they asked me was, hey, a lot of gig workers say they're leaving because their boss doesn't know what they need and how to grow them. Okay. So the question, so that was a statement. from their research that they came up with. And then the question was, what can companies do to train their older managers to be better managers? And I was like, whoa, pause right there. Like, you are making a huge leap that it is, you know, that older managers are doing that, number one. Number two, that it's the manager's fault, not the company's fault, not the model of management being expected by the company for those leaders. And also, you're not giving any responsibility for the Gen Z, millennial, you know, worker, sure, whoever, to account, to learn and understand how things may work. And it's going to take everybody, right? And that's why, you know, this inflection point that we're at right now is really hard. It's really complicated. Yeah. You know, going back into basketball, and only people who follow it is sort of maniacally closely, like I feel like I do sometimes, can appreciate, college basketball is so interesting right now because of the pandemic. So what happened in the pandemic was the NCAA felt bad, and it was a good decision. They said, you know what? We had to cancel basically a season. We're going to give every student an extra year. Okay. So now that may be great for the students in there. It was not great for the incoming freshmen. Yeah. So all the scholarships are taken for. Then they said, we're going to let any Division I athlete in basketball and football, the big, you know, money-making sports, transfer without having to sit out a year. So now you've got coaches are like, okay, I can invest my time the way I've always done it and look at freshman talent and try to groom the freshman talent. But why would I do that when I have a fully formed man who's 22, 23 years old, who knows the system, who's learned different defensive strategies, who I've got a proven track record can do it. They're physically bigger, maybe more durable, maybe a little smarter in understanding our scheme. I can now get any transfer from any school in the country. And all these coaches had to shift from something they're going to have to shift back to in a few years when this rule expires. That is so interesting to me. And one coach at Texas Tech has, even before the pandemic, they were notorious for taking the fifth year senior, the kid that redshirted freshman year, and they didn't get a lot of playing time at a big school. So come over here and we're going to extend your runway. And they were phenomenal at that. That was their thing. You are not going to go there as a freshman and play 4 years up. That wasn't their model. And they got to the Final Four 2 years ago doing that really, really well. That's when they got on my radar. Like, what are they doing over there? That's so interesting.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that is just, for me, that is a great study that all leaders and all levels of organizations can go, the game just changed. Are you still using the same tactics? Are you still looking to have people play the same way, you know, and do the same thing and expect to win? Because the rules just changed.
Absolutely. You know? And I would argue that in a lot of that, that's totally parallel to the real world. And, mm-hmm, you know, if you're a hospital outside of your doctors and your surgeons, you actually employ probably more non-doctors and surgeons at a hospital than you do doctors and surgeons. So what we're saying is everybody is a potential employee. Everybody's out there. You know, we had that saying in the car business of people, the reason people love the car business, it's car business and funeral homes always have customers. There's always a customer. Somebody always needs a car. Every family has kids. Those kids need a car. They're going to have kids. There's somebody always needs a car. And in this, somebody always wants to work. And if you create enough value and you create enough, and I think sometimes creating value gets misconstrued. Or you have to have shiny things, or you have to have these elaborate like job descriptions. And I don't actually agree with that. I think it's actually, if you create an environment and you know your demographic, and we've talked about this a lot, and this blows my mind, and this kind of crosses over even into the medium and large businesses of, you have all this data and know exactly who your customer is. How in blue blazes do you not know all the data and demographics to know the right fit for you as an employee? And if, because you have enough, you have data, you know who works, you know who's going to fit, like, you know where this person comes from. Where did your best employees come from? Did they come from broken homes? Did they come from you know, the other side of the tracks? Did they come from working fast food first and realize they didn't like it? And it's like you have that data. So take that data and then say, okay, this is who we need to target. And these are like, we need to go after these people in every community around us because these people fit well with us and they love it here. And they, you know, they nurture the great culture that we want to have. And I think that's important.
Yeah. Let me oversimplify what we're talking about here. Why are we even having this conversation? I think we're having the conversation because people have never really valued one of the most important muscles you need in an organization. And that's recruiting people. Like I've been dealing with companies all over the world for the last 10 years. And they're always saying on the walls and the posters, oh yeah, people number one, and their marketing collateral, their employee value, people number one here. And you go in there and I think they believe that, but they don't know how to bring that to life. I said, so is the most important team here the recruiting team then? The team that's bringing in the people? Is that the most important team? They have the biggest budget, that the people with the best experience? Have you recruited the best recruiters in the world? No, you've not. Is the best systems you got, the recruiting, the talent assessment systems, are those the best systems you got? Because isn't that the most important resource you have? Yeah, no. The accounting system and the, you know, CRM, the sales tracker, way more invested in. Okay, so this is a moment. It's a moment of truth for the world of recruiting. And I feel really fortunate, you know, having been at a company whose product was recruiting. Like, we got into it, man. And we sort of felt like, if we're not really good at this and this is what we do as a business, we shouldn't be in business.
Yeah.
And so we're like, we should live it. And even though we'd all come from companies where that we all said that before, bringing that to life looks very, very different. Yeah. And that's why we're here. That's why we're even having this conversation right now, because everyone is struggling with this. And Shane, I'm here we are, like year three of the pandemic. It's not going to change tomorrow. It's only going to get more challenging.
And trying to play, I think one of the things that I guess because I'm on the front lines of this, so I hear these different conversations and I hear these things of like, there's a lot of blame trying to be laid, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's wasted air and wasted time. Cause when the dust settles at the end of the day, I believe this, if you're an owner, if you're a founder of a company, if how it should work, and I'm sure there's a lot of debate out there, but how it should work is you actually work for your team, right? You work for your company. It is your responsibility. If someone is hired in your company and they don't work out and you have the audacity to say, well, they didn't know this and they didn't know that. Well, who hired them? Who brought them in? Who hired the people that brought them in? And that buck gets passed around a lot. And I think when the dust settles, and I'm excited for you and I to look back in 5 or 6 years and look at this and then start to do our own studies and be like, oh yeah, remember you wanted to place blame on everybody else when in reality it was you didn't want to take ownership for the mistakes and the deficiencies you had. And a lot of times as leaders, it's a lot like parenting, right? I can be pissed all day long that my kids leave a cup out or leave their cereal bowl out. But if I'm doing it too, what am I mad about? Right? Why am I upset? And that's a simplistic way of looking at it, but placing blame, I just think you're showing a massive deficiency and you're actually validating to people why they don't want to come work for you.
Right. So let's pause for a second, Shane, and just brainstorm you and I right now. If we were called into an organization and say, hey, okay, we hear you bashing us around, we need a new talent strategy. Like, what? And I would say, if you recruit when someone leaves, it's too late. You need to be recruiting all the time. So what can you do to be drawing talent to you all the time? You can have more open houses. You can have living, breathing videos that you're producing that where people are wearing a GoPro running around talking about all the cool stuff they're working on. You can be building, you know, your culture, you could be asking your employees to please go on Glassdoor and say, if you like working here and you want other great people here and you want your bonus to be bigger, we need more great people. So will you help us in that effort? You will close the company down for an afternoon or a weekend or a day and have everyone just hammer their networks to serve up candidates. You will look at your recruiting like white glove concierge level service. That's what you'll start to do. And then you start rewarding people for the most innovative ideas on recruiting. We did some stupid little thing at LinkedIn one time that had enormous benefit at the time. We're like, oh, this is really dumb. People loved it. When you were due to have an interview at LinkedIn, and we knew you were due in at, say, 10 o'clock, and we knew where you lived because we have your data, we would send you a traffic report when you got up in the morning. Here's how long it's going to take you. Here's where you need to go. And when you showed up for your interview, we gave you an iPad with all the LinkedIn profiles of everyone you're going to go see, the location of your conference rooms, so you could figure it out. Like, just silly little stuff like that, but shows like this is an important moment for us. And most companies are still like, you're lucky to be even interviewing here. Maybe you'll be so lucky to get a second interview. Yeah. And they're not helping you with anything, right? Yeah. They're not telling you what to dress, what time to show up, nothing. They're not briefing you on the people you're talking to. All of our recruiters, when we had someone important coming in, or even if they weren't that important, okay, here's all the people that you're talking to. Here's why we're having you talk to them. Here's kind of what's important to them. You know, we would help coach them because we wanted them to have their best moment, you know? And so even if it didn't work out, and especially if you're in the B2C business and you're recruiting someone, they could be a customer of yours. That should be a great
probably
experience.
Are a customer of yours. Yeah, they most likely are.
Right. So, I mean, just off that, those are just off the top of my head, you know, and you've mentioned some of your other shows, like, you know, there's thinking more creatively around how to go about building your funnel and giving that candidate experience like phenomenal. And by the way, when you deliver great jobs, your people naturally are going to bring in more people to want to work in your company. Right. And if nobody's referring anyone, I'm sorry, but look in the mirror because something's not right in your company if none of your employees are referring anybody.
Yeah. I'm going to give you an example, and it's probably going to sound like a slight, and I'm just being very like blunt with my observation. So where I live, there's a once a month Chamber of Commerce meeting where everybody goes and they eat bad food and they go sit around, and it's in this big thing, and it's just not a great experience. You got to pay money, and they do a cake giveaway from the local bakery. And to be frank, none of that shit brings any value to anybody. Mm-hmm. What they should do is say, okay, only come to this if you're willing to engage in conversation, because everybody in town right now is struggling to hire, and we all need to collectively put our heads together. So we're going to randomly put everybody at tables, and we're going to start conversations. And I want to know what everybody's doing that's working. I want to know the things that you're, for the first 30 minutes, let's talk about all the things that aren't working. Tell me, let's talk about all the things you've done that you thought was going to bring in the right people, because even though it didn't work for you, it may work for somebody else. Or maybe you help somebody else and they're like, oh, I was going to try that. Man, I'm glad you did. I thought that was a good place to spend my money. I'm glad that's going to save me, right? These different things, that's the things you do. Or you sit around in your team and you say, look, and again, this goes back to leadership, right? And we talk about culture a lot. I don't mean to get back into culture, but if you create an environment, you've shared Jeff Weiner's approach and how he does things and the autonomy he gave you guys. It wasn't that like he allowed you guys to do whatever you wanted to do, but he created you the space that you could bring ideas and you could bring things up if you want to. And, you know, that is a huge thing. So allow your team to sit down and say, I want to bluntly hear everything that you don't like here. I want to know everything that makes you frustrated. I want to know, tell me the things that when you go home, you're venting to your spouse about. And now I also want to know, what are the things that I said I would never, what did I told you? No, we could never do that when it comes to hiring people. These are really simple things that off the cuff. Now, you and I are immersed in this every day, and we get to hear about the horror stories and you know, nightmares and really successful situations. We work with some great companies that have it figured out. We absolutely do. And this stuff isn't hard. The problem is most, like you hit on it, most small local businesses have never had to recruit. You know how they recruited? They put a freaking sign out on the marquee and said, now taking applications. That ain't recruiting. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, I'll use that reference how it's used in sales. There's a difference in taking orders and there's a difference in selling something. And taking orders is how I welcome to McDonald's. Would you like a number one or a number two? Those people are going to buy something, right? But convert somebody that you walk up to on the street and say, hey, would you like to come to McDonald's and buy a couple Big Macs? Well, I wasn't really thinking about it yet. Well, let me tell you about these Big Macs. Mm-hmm. And then that's actually selling, right? And that's what we now got to do when it comes to the thing. You hit on some of these things. Why not? It goes back to knowing your demographic. If you're a pizza chain and you know your demographic, you should have senior day once a week for every local high school and allow them to come in and do some really cool stuff and have some other local people there sharing some. These are simple things that don't cost you any money, but because, I tried something one time 6 years ago and it didn't work. Well, yeah, I'm sure it didn't. And with that attitude, it won't. And you got to change how you approach these things. So,
yeah, there's some organizations doing some really interesting things that are helping solve problems in our society, in our communities. There's an organization that I've worked with for years, actually founded by some classmates of mine, unbeknownst to me at the time. It's called Year Up. And what Year Up has done is created a training program for desktop support, okay, at the high school level and community college level, particularly in low-income school districts, okay, around the country, teaching people how to do desktop support, teaching people fundamentals of that, you know, installing a computer, loading new software, upgrading this, fixing a frozen computer, you know, and the customer service skills. You know, when you're touching someone's laptop, you're touching their, you know, their source of income, right? So you got to, and so what we met with these people when I was at LinkedIn, and they came in and said, hey, would you be interested in taking an intern from Year Up? And the goal is, if it works out, like, you hire them, you know, after they graduate. And so we're like, let's come in and let's hear what you have to say. We heard the pitch and we said, my head of IT is like, yeah, I don't think we can take one. How about five? And they're like, what? Yeah, we want five. Can you give me five? And they're like, what do you mean? Like, you don't have the numbers. Yeah, we're going to be hiring that many people and there's a lot of work. So, and those kids were highly excited, but also brought a lot of energy. And the naivete of like, I can have a free coffee. Like, I can have that soda. I don't have to pay for. Yeah. Yeah. That's how we're, what, you know? And then they're just amazingly, you know, value add. And then you're feeling good about solving not just your recruiting needs. You're building an ecosystem of someone's hopefully economic vitality in their families, you know? That's a beautiful thing.
I got a new idea. It literally just popped in my head. We're talking about young people, right? And we've heard for years, young people don't want to work. These young people don't want to work. Well, I think you and I are probably testaments to the contrary. You've got a high school age son who works. I've got a high school age son that goes to work every weekend and, you know, doing these different things. And, you know, I look at this and I say, okay, if you're trying, you're offering a job right now at $12 an hour. Probably going to be a young person taking that job. Okay. They're a young person taking that job. How can you incentivize to ensure that you never have to worry about that again? It's not paying them $15, $20 an hour. Go to them and say, hey, we partnered with the local movie theater here. They're going to allow on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays, you guys get in for a dollar. Okay. So you can get into the movie for a dollar. On the slowest days of the movie theater, you get in for a dollar. And employee of the month every month, we'll actually give you a gift card there so you can get free whatever. And not only we did that, but the local sports team here, we've reached out to them and you get to, like, we're going to draw and we're going to give tickets away to this. And everybody wants to attract people in to a, like, they're all doing this, right? you very like, let's be honest. It doesn't take a whole lot of money to excite a teenager to be excited. Like what, like tell me what you do in your downtime. Wow. I play video games. Perfect. I tell you what, if you come on time, if you're on time every day for the first 2 months, I'll give you a $20 gift card to the GameStop and you can go get a game or whatever. Like we'll do that. Like we'll do these crazy things. It's like, well, you know, corporate won't allow us. Well, then you need to tell corporate, then figure out how they're going to solve this problem. Mm-hmm. Otherwise I'm going to fix it. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's, we're talking about $20 that a movie ticket. I guarantee you that theater wouldn't even charge you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wouldn't even charge you to get in. Wouldn't even
so like, brilliant.
So mm-hmm. you bring your employee card and say, I'm with McDonald's. I work there. Cool. Mondays and Tuesdays, you get in for $1. Right.
Yeah.
There's so many things that we can do that are outside of what we think. And, you know,
and when don't cost hardly anything.
No.
Yeah. They don't cost much.
It's taken the time to think about what mm-hmm. you have access to.
Yeah.
Right. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. I came across earlier today a communication from a fellow board member. So I sit on the board of a company called Giroux Glass. Giroux Glass is a company that installs very, you know, customized, serious like glass on. We did Allegiant Stadium. We did SoFi, not all the glass, but a lot of the glass in there. We're doing casinos and big buildings in Los Angeles, Phoenix, and Nevada. So what we've been noticing in that world is the supply of trades workers is shrinking. You know, just like in every industry, fill in the blank, yep. it's shrinking.
Yep.
So we cast out a wide net recently going, hey, what are our peer companies? What are other people hiring trades doing? And someone shared something this morning, hit my radar. I was like, now that is smart, really smart. And it was right in front of our face. Someone said, yeah, we're looking to, you know, they were looking to hire people to do sort of high-end plumbing and electrical work. You know what they do? They go to Home Depot and Lowe's and hardware store parking lots, and they put flyers on the windshields of beat-up pickup trucks. That's what they do. They say, you want to be an apprentice? This is what we pay. You know, this is more than you're working at the taqueria or wherever sure. it is that you're working. We're going to pay you to learn, and you know, this is something that, you know, you could join a union or whatever to get all kinds of other perks and benefits. And it works like really well. And we're like, yeah. why didn't we think of that? You know, we're these glass installations take a lot of time for someone to understand all the nuances of, you know, heat and what heat can do to glass and, you know, sound necessity for sound. And now we're getting glass that sort of can be a solar panel. And the complexity yeah. of that's going in super interesting, but that is, we're going to have to go earlier up the funnel to the high schools and maybe start putting them on, you know, windshields of high school parking lots. I don't know. Super
Why not?
Interesting.
Why but that's, not?
It's old school, but it's working, you know, because yeah. that's where those people are hanging out.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And just to your point around the gaming is where sort of like, if there's a game that you can buy some ad space in at a certain hour of the night, when you know people of that age are playing the game,
100%.
You can target it, you know?
100%, 100%. And that's the thing, like it's man, like pay to, like if you have an employee and they're like, oh man, a young kid and you're interviewing him and he's like, oh, well, you know, what do you want to be long-term? I really want to be a YouTuber. Cool, tell you what we're going to do. Let's work this out. Let's put our head together. I'm going to buy you a camera, and we'll help, you know, we'll help pay for you the camera and the supplies that you need. I just ask that one day a week you come in and you shoot a vlog of what's going on here and you talk about your experience of work here, and then we'll go through it and we'll do it. Right? Now, all of a sudden you're giving him what he wants, right? You know, this young man is not going to work for you for 20 years. So you're now feeding in. If he all of a sudden becomes this massive influencer in this trade world, he's not going to want to leave because he's working at a place that's giving him flexibility. You're getting the brand exposure. You're getting the recruiting and other guys. Like there's so many, like everybody, listen, there is a channel that I found and I'm going to, this is where people think that everything has to be shiny and sexy and whatever. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Kentucky. I can fish. I know how to catfish. I know how to fish for crappie. I know how to fish for bass. I know how to fish. You give me a rod and reel and some tackle and some live bait, I can catch some fish. I know what I'm doing. Not done it in years, but I know what I'm doing. I don't know why YouTube sent me this ad during the pandemic at a time where I had exhausted every TV show possible. 618 Fishing, I believe, is the channel. And it's just a logo with a hat and some glasses mm-hmm. and like a lure or something on the hat. And it is this guy in Illinois who wears a GoPro and sets a camera up and talks. And he gets, I'm talking about ecstatic over going to these little random places and getting permission and going in this little creek and just looking for a fish. And he's talking like, I don't know if I'm going to catch anything today. And he catches the smallest little fish. This is the first time I've ever caught one of these. This is amazing. I guarantee you, I'm going to look it up, but I guarantee you, he started out, when I started watching it, he had about 18,000. He had about 18,000 followers. Okay. Whoa. 618 Fishing has 535,000 subscribers to his YouTube channel. He's probably now doing this full time. And every thumbnail is only a picture of either the live bait, like a fish head that he's used, or some lure that's literally it. It's just a picture of that. And he's it going somewhere. Like he had a video. It's illegal to keep this tiny creek fish, 233,000 views. If you think that you can't work at a trades place and have somebody vlog and build a brand and people love it, you are crazy. People will watch it. People watch grass grow, right? There's videos where people have these ant farms mm-hmm. and these grubs, and they'll drop a piece of rotted fruit and they do it at fast time. And you see all this dirt moving. Just like, do these things and think outside the box. Like, it's not hard. Mm-hmm. That camera's going to cost you $800. And that kid's going to think that you gave him a Porsche. That's it.
Yeah.
It's not hard. It's not hard.
I love hearing stories like that. And I do think, you know, to jump on the point that you just made, the video, the data visualization is such a powerful dimension to get eyeballs. I mean, that's the world that we live in right now is, yeah.
We use it.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing here.
Right.
We're not here to be celebrities. We know somebody's going to watch this and somebody's going to say, hey, Steve, I'd like to pay you X number of dollars to come in and talk. That's what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. They do it all the time. Mm-hmm. And
it's underutilized.
Yeah.
All right. So let's go up the stream to, you know,
do you want to go up the stream or do you want to save that for another episode?
Let's save it for another episode.
I think
I like the tidiness of this, you know, the focal point of what we're talking about here.
Yeah. Small business.
That's right.
Local community, like strategy. So we don't want, we don't muddy the water with the others.
We'll
keep it there on this episode. I like that.
Let me offer a little bit more on this because you know this because you're part of helping this community. But so the Hospital Association in the Midwest, one of these, you know, organizations reached out to us and said, hey, you know, can you come and help us? We're struggling with recruiting. We're struggling with retaining. We're dealing with all kinds of challenges with people retiring early and so forth and so on. And one of the things that we researched was what assets does a local community have right now? And so I came up with a bunch, you came up with a bunch, and I was shocked how simple stuff that we pulled out of our hat was like, oh my God, they were so grateful. I said, for example, one of the challenges that small hospitals have in, or we call it suburban or rural America, is that a lot of the nursing students will go to nursing school from the community. They'll fall in love with somebody in a city, and that partner will not want to move to, you know, rural America.
Small town USA.
That's right. And that nurse gets a job offer locally for a whole lot more money than she's making or he's making there. And so they're like, oh. And so I said, look, the pandemic has served the opportunity of people being able to work remotely and not have to deal with these big cities and high rent and high mortgage and parking fees and all that. There is a groundswell of people running to the country. Are you using that? And then we talked about rotations. Can you get the big cities to send their students, their doctors, their nurses to you for a tour, 6 months, a year? And when they're there, market the heck out of your town. People are tired of feeling disconnected. They want to feel a part of something, and you've got that. Like, do you know what assets you have? Are you recognizing the, like, make sure you got good Wi-Fi, but when those digital nomads come to your town and they can work there, they don't need to work in the city. That's an asset. Are you using that? And I just got blank looks from people like, what are you talking? Like, we're just trying to keep the hospital alive. We're not thinking about stuff like that. I'm like, you need to think about stuff like that. You know,
it's one of those things where, like, local communities, one of the things that we got big was like this whole, daycare industry is down, right? And these different things. And maybe you've got some teachers that want to take a break from teaching, but they still want to help kids and they still want to work. And, you know, maybe as a hospital, let's form our own daycare. Or, you know, I tell you what, you've sparked a thought when we were having this conversation with this client. There's a very large percentage of people in a community. I'll use my community of 40,000 people. My guess is there's probably 2,000 people who live here who either don't have a driver's license for whatever reason, either medically, legally, just haven't gotten it. They don't have a driver's license, and they don't have, or they don't have a car. They don't have reliable transportation, right? Well, there's a problem that's happened here in rural America. My son has had 6 different bus drivers since the school year started. They literally quit. He'll have a bus driver in the morning and then realize his bus driver quit and is not there in the afternoon. Right? Well, why is that? Because they don't have long hours. So there's a small amount of pay and there's not consistent work. There's half the year they're not even working. Right? Why not go to the local community? Why not reach out to the mayor and say, hey, look, let's run a study. Let's go to the local, whoever handles our underserved populations. Let's figure out how many people don't have means of transportation or the ability to get means of transportation. And let's see, can we subsidize? Can we have Chamber of Commerce instead of holding this horrible dinner that we're holding once a month? Let's put that money towards some insurance. Let's put that money towards some funds and let's run some routes and let's go pick people up and help people. And then what we're going to do is we're going to have the local used car dealership say, hey, like, we can do this. Let's figure out a way where we can start donating cars. And we've got some used cars. We'll fix them up. We normally just junk them or whatever. And we'll try to repurpose them and get them back out there because it's probably a tax write-off for you. And nobody's doing it just because it's easier not to. There's this resource of why are we – because there's no public transportation here, right? If you want to go somewhere, you're either hoofing it. We've got maybe 6 Ubers running at any given time or – you don't work. So what if that, like, you know, it's easy to point somebody out and call them lazy because they're not working. But what if we actually find out that maybe that person is legally blind and they don't have very good finances and they can't afford a car?
Yeah.
And then, this is our community of people that need help. And as a community, you asked, how can we have our community come together? Well, now all of a sudden, guess what? Now all of a sudden you don't have a janitor shortage. Now, all of a sudden, you don't have a receptionist shortage at the hospital because we just found you 12 people that are willing to work. We just got to work with the school district to run routes and run buses. That's what we got to do. So this isn't hard. It just takes, I guess, entrepreneurship in a lot of ways. It takes a bit of ingenuity. It takes some creativity. It takes some stepping back. Get out of your own muck. And it takes bringing some people in, bring people into your community. I'm not even going to use Steve. Bring people into your community who aren't from your community. Bring people into your industry who aren't from your industry. This is how you get creativity. This is how you get new ideas. This is how you get new thought processes. And, you know, maybe the cafeteria lady working at the school district, she's not getting paid a whole lot and there's only so many hours. Well, You need people to run first shift or third shift. So why not, like, hey, let's work this out where you actually go to the hospital and work third shift and help in the cafeteria there, getting meals ready. And then you leave and go finish up at the school district and then you're done. And now you're actually making double the money. Mm-hmm. Like, there's ways we can do this. This isn't difficult. It is hard, but it's not impossible. Yeah. And we've overcome much more. And I know it's easy for me to get up on my podium and beat my chest and say, I've got all the answers. I know you don't do this. I don't do this. I'm not saying I have all the answers, but I can certainly help you spark a thought process that'll help you get to some of the answers.
Right. And I'll give a last story here. It's connected, but different in a way. One of the things that we did at LinkedIn, and I would encourage every company, steal this idea. Please, we stole it from somebody. It might've been Google. I don't know. A day a month, maybe do a day a quarter, whatever works for you. We called it In Day, Innovation Day. It's into whatever you want to get into that day. Do a blood drive. Help a veteran fix up their LinkedIn profile. Go volunteer in a classroom. Take your kids to a nature park. Like, fill your tank with something inspirational. So because I was an executive, and this is one of the first weeks that we're doing this, the CEO is like, hey, all you executives, you got to come up with ideas on stuff to do. I was like, oh, okay. So I call my mom, who's always been really involved in the community. Mom, you got any ideas? She goes, yeah, we got a soup kitchen this Friday. Why don't you come and bring some people and serve the homeless? And I was like, okay, awesome. And so I show up with, sign up sheet. You know, there's, 50 things all our employees could have signed up for, right? And so a bunch of people come in from LinkedIn. I didn't know most of them. And so one gentleman I met, his name was Julian Bubel. And Julian was one of our best salespeople. He, an incredible person. He's since become a really good friend. Well, anyway, he's talking to my mom like the 4 hours we're working there. And the guy is just like soaking it all in. Like, how does this work? And how many people are here? And how often do you do it? My mom was like, well, every week it rotates, a different church takes this on and their parish comes up with the food and it's served. And, one thing rolls to another. A year later, Julian is running food supply to the homeless in San Francisco of a proportion the city has never seen. He contracts with every major restaurant, picks up all their unused, uncooked, uneaten stuff that for a couple more days would spoil, delivers it to all the homeless shelters. And now he's got, and his kids are part of it. His friends are a part of it. And it changed the dynamics of the city. The guys won all kinds of awards, philanthropist of the year. And no one asked him to do that. He just came into a situation that was different. He brought a different idea to the table and it changed the life of him and his family. Yeah. It's unbelievable. And a city of San Francisco, like, we're talking thousands and thousands of pounds of food getting distributed every day. Unbelievable.
And millions of dollars have been thrown at that problem, trying to solve it, right? Trying to fix it. And here he did, just by an idea and a thought process and willingness to execute on it, is
right.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. We need to talk about this guy off air, cause I got to learn more about this guy. I like this.
Yeah.
Guy.
Yeah. And maybe we even have him on the show.
Oh, I love it. Oh,
he is a fan. He listens and he's, like a lot of our friends, like giving us good ideas on topics, but
would love to have him on.
Yeah. And that's the net of it. I mean, if to finish on a positive note, when we think about where we're at, it feels like we're in quicksand. Because we've never been here before, it may feel a little less scary to guys like you and I, because we've had to be scrappy and we've been in highly competitive situations where failure wasn't an option and we had to be creative. And I feel like you're probably a lot more creative than I am, Shane, in a lot of ways, but I do think that that's our call to action. Don't you want to be creative? Don't you want to reinvent new ways of recruiting your organization? I mean, it's kind of boring just to do the same old, we call it at LinkedIn, post and pray that you get a candidate to apply. Like, this is way more fun. And we got that moment now to really create.
I'm actually going to extend an invite to any small business or local community or local small town government anybody who listens to this that falls into the category of today, and you want to do some real brainstorming and you want to do some real talking, we'll have you on the show. And I don't care if it's 10 of you, we'll schedule a time and have all of you have your own show, and we'll figure out a time and you come on. And if you know somebody, tag somebody in the comments who meets this, whether you're an entrepreneur, you're struggling with these kind of things. Look, you don't have to pay to come on the show. It's none of that. It's come on and we'll help. We'll just brainstorm with you. And if you want to, we can do it live and have folks
the audience
chime in.
Brainstorm too.
Yes.
That's a great idea, Shane. Yeah. That's a great idea.
Yeah. I love it.
That's
man.
Why I say you're the creative one over here. Really smart.
Yeah.
And maybe this show morphs into something like that. It's like, you know, we're going to help your work week after hours, you know, absolutely.
Yeah. I like that show, Bar Rescue. I love that show. Me too. And I'd love, if any TV producers out there or any Netflix folks, we'd love to discuss an idea that I've got for Steve around a very similar synopsis of that. So, we know this, I know this of you. That's why I didn't have to ask you. Like we're here to help. Like that, this is like, there's a monetary value and we get that, and that happens, and that this doesn't play a part in that. The purpose of us doing this is provide value for people. And, I'm blessed to get a front row seat and see you do that on such a high level every day. To use this platform to be able to kind of dive in and help the people who, you know, aren't going to pay to have you come in or can't pay to have you come in. You know, it doesn't mean that those people don't still deserve some sort of value. And I know you believe that as well. So,
we learn a lot in the process too. Right. And that's why I love the diversity of the audience and the perspectives, just, and really helps. And like when we took on the hospital associations recently, I was like, whoa, man, I had no idea how fierce their challenges are and how the depth of despair that they're facing, man. It's hard, but it was really inspiring too, to see the ideas they had and the willingness to want to change. So yeah, let's bring it on.
We'd love for you to come on. We'd love for you to come on. And as long as you're willing to be transparent, we'd love to come and create some really cool conversation. So it's a great episode, Steve.
Yeah. Thanks, Shane. Steve Cadigan here with Shane Howard, the amazing Shane Howard, for the Work Week After Hours. Thank you for sticking around, and we'll see you next time.
Cheers.